The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, "Is it over yet? Businesses may have hit the bar in terms of raising prices as supply chain issues continue to plague operations." And the cover story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, "When will it be over? More than 2 years since problems first began, the Triangle's construction industry is still feeling the effects of a battered global supply chain." Written by Laura Brumette. For the past 2 years, Raleigh-based Professional Builder Supply has faced an exhaustive game of whack-a-mole with the global supply chain. One day, panels of oriented strand board could be hard to come by, then windows could no longer be in stock, next, doors are no longer available. Windows, doors, siding, we've seen almost every product category on some kind of allocation in addition to extended lead times, says founder and CEO Van Isley. It's just one product category after another that's created a challenge. You just have to navigate through it the best you can on any given day. The supply chain. The phrase was simply an operations management term in 2019. Since the pandemic began, the three words have morphed into an intangible cloud that hangs over the world and seeps into conversations from college classrooms to casual dinner parties. Expenses incurred along the supply chain have trickled down from companies to consumers over the past 2 years, and in the rapidly growing triangle, the scramble for product and the intense demand for homes and commercial space has resulted in rising prices. Commodity prices have begun to cool, leaving hope for a return to pre-pandemic normalcy. After the pandemic hit, lumber costs soared, peaking at $1,670.50 per thousand board feet in May 2021. Prices have declined since the spring, dropping from $1,031.50 per thousand board feet on April 29 to $516 on August 29. But commodity pricing is just one mole the Triangle's real estate sector must whack. And the surging prices for consumers and the community as a whole are raising questions from affordability of housing to whether workers will return to the office towers that cost so many millions of dollars to build. The waiting game. Building a structure requires a multitude of materials and fabricated goods that must be placed in a specific order. The absence of one product can delay or even derail the entire project, and each new shortage drives up costs. For David Fitch, president of Fitch Lumber and Hardware in Carrboro, the business has been a roller coaster in recent years. The current dip in prices for commodities is a break in a market where demand has been intense, he says. We've been going at a 45-degree angle the past 2 years in terms of growth, and I think now it might slow down to like a 30-degree angle, Fitch says. That might help get some of these things back in line. His company, which sells an array of building materials and supplies, has seen sales escalate during the pandemic, but its revenue numbers have a note of false inflation, Fitch says. In comparison to pre-pandemic figures, Fitch Lumber's gross sales have shot up, but that's expected when the cost of a 2x4 doubles in price, he says. At the same time, though, the quantity sold has gone up, so the company has still grown from where it was before the pandemic. Professor J. Swaminathan of the UNC Chapel Hill Kenan Flagler Business School traces the supply chain issues facing the construction industry back to before the pandemic began. The easy monetary policy adopted in the United States allowed home mortgage rates and real estate development rates to be very low. The policy aimed to spur growth, and it succeeded. The nation saw an increase in construction activity. Housing inventory was already low, providing an opportunity for heavy investment in new developments. And then the pandemic hit. With more people building, more items and types of products were needed, says Swaminathan, the GlaxoSmithKline Distinguished Professor of Operations. But a good percentage of these things come from China. Suddenly there were transportation delays, shortages of various types, and that led to an escalation in prices, he says. Despite the supply chain beginning to right itself in areas like lumber prices, costs are still far from normal for builders. Prices for fabricated or manufactured products such as windows, pipes, and doors are still soaring. Anything that's fabricated or manufactured, all those things had 2, 3, sometimes 4 price increases, Fitch says. Those prices are not going to come down. They might drop a little bit with bargain sales if people are trying to get inventory off the shelves, but we're not at that point yet. Though not promised, better days are likely ahead. Time is the antidote for the chain's backlog plight, Swaminathan says. From his perspective, the supply chain could right itself in 12 to 18 months. Companies like Fitch rely on ports to get some of their products supply. In fiscal 2022, North Carolina's 2 deepwater ports experienced a record year for general cargo. The Port of Wilmington and the Port of Morehead City, both controlled by the North Carolina State Ports Authority, have felt the effects of increased demand meeting backlogs in the supply chain firsthand. North Carolina ports saw a record-breaking operating revenue of $68 million for the year that ended June 30. The ports recorded a total of 960,026 break bulk tons moved through, a 30% increase from fiscal 2021. Of that cargo, materials headed for construction sites included dimensional lumber, cement, plywood, medium-density fiberboard, and steel. Approximately 165,000 tons of dimensional lumber, primarily European spruce and pine, were imported through North Carolina's ports. When trying to keep up with demand, one of the biggest challenges the ports faced during the pandemic was vessel reliability, Ports Authority spokeswoman Christina Halling says. Backlogs and delays at other ports have caused container ships to reach the Port of Wilmington late, she says. While that problem persists, general cargo, total cargo moving through the port, continues to see growth. The first month of the fiscal year 2023, July, experienced an 11% year-on-year increase. The Fed swoops in. The sheer volume of construction and development over the past 2 years has strained the supply chain as well. Local builders have raced to add housing supply, and commercial developers have taken advantage of interest from out-of-state lenders. On top of having trouble getting materials, subcontractors have struggled to keep up with the high demand, says Andy Andrews, CEO of Raleigh's Dominion Realty. Issues with product availability, a permitting backup with local municipalities, and the labor shortage have combined to create delays. When developing a project, delays don't just mean that a structure's delivery is pushed back. Extended timelines mean either raising more equity or raising more debt, Andrew says. 10 years ago, common loan to values, or LTV, were 75% debt and 25% equity. Now, 60% debt and 40% equity are more common, Andrew says. If you've got more cost, then you've got to raise even more money, says. It's gotten more complicated because as things cost more, you've got a lot more money at risk. The longer the delays, the more it's going to cost the average Joe out there renting the units. In recent months, the Federal Reserve has raised interest rates to curb inflation. That move makes borrowing more difficult across the board, from single-family home buyers to developers, and a pause in lending stands to improve supply chain issues. Banks aren't lending right now, so there's not going to be as much coming out of the ground, Andrew says. I think we're going to see end-of-summer pricing way down from where it was a year ago. We're hoping that plays into account because it's not easy out there right now with lenders putting their pencils down until the end of the year. Shrinking office market. The sudden retreat from physical office space seen during the pandemic could not have been predicted 3 years prior. Before the pandemic, developing office projects was a safe bet in the Triangle. In 2019, downtown Raleigh had 7.4 million square feet of private office space with an occupancy rate of 96.2%. Another 2.2 million square feet of office space was planned or already under construction. Projects from outside developers promising hundreds of thousands of square feet of office space, such as Raleigh Crossing and Block 83, were well positioned to capitalize on the high demand. The first phase of the Raleigh Crossing project, developed by the Fallon Company, broke ground in September 2019. The 19-story tower, dubbed 301 Hillsborough, was scheduled to deliver in the fourth quarter of 2021, but the grand opening was pushed to April 2022. Over the course of the 2.5 years it took to complete 301 Hillsborough, rising material prices, labor costs, and delays all took hold of the construction industry. In a 3-year period, you saw quite a significant rise in pricing, says Andrews, who has developed similar projects. Whether it's concrete, steel, or stick, it's all experienced the price increases, which is impacting the customer because they're the ones who've got to pay the rent to overcome it. Office space in the tower is listed at $41.50 per square foot, one of the highest rates in the Triangle area. Down the street from 301 Hillsboro sits another recently completed office project, the Block 83 development. The development's Tower 2, completed in 2021, is also asking for $41.50 per square foot. By comparison, the Truist building on Fayetteville Street, built in 1991, is asking $29.50. While development costs rose during the pandemic, demand for office space declined. Once it became clear, workers were not keen on returning to a full-time office schedule after enjoying the luxuries of a work-from-home environment, companies pivoted. Some pulled out of office expansion plans, some sublet their existing office spaces, and others nixed policies requiring workers to be based locally as remote working became plausible. This year's State of Downtown report by the Downtown Raleigh Alliance shows the area has 9 million square feet of private office space with an occupancy rate of 88.4%. The number of office subleases is also growing. The second quarter saw 2.7 million square feet of office space up for sublease in the Triangle, according to Triangle Business Journal's space publication. But with subleasing factored in, the market's office vacancy rate is close to 17%. In other markets, developers have had to take a profit cut on new office buildings due to demand not being high enough to charge higher rent, Swaminathan says. The same could happen here. The demand for office space is uniformly going down across many markets and the costs have gone up, he says. A dip in demand could cause developers to pause their plans. In the commercial office space, I don't see the demand coming back rapidly, Swaminathan says. Building it might be a high risk at this point. More people, more problems. Unlike the office market, the demand for multifamily housing has stayed strong in the Triangle. Occupancy for multifamily properties has surpassed its 2019 number, going from 94.4% to 94.9% in 2022. Meanwhile, the average price of rent has jumped by $370 per unit. Currently, 6,840 residential units have been planned or proposed in downtown Raleigh. If extra costs are incurred during those build-outs, higher unit and prices can act as a cushion to balance expenses out. The pandemic also sparked a home buying craze, and the Triangle supply couldn't keep up with demand. More supply coming online could level things out a bit, but demand in the area will stay high, says Susan Harris of the Home Builders Association of Raleigh-Wake County. Relative to the nation, it's still a very affordable place to live, Harris says. Rising interest rates have softened the demand, but the local market is still strong. Higher interest rates will likely help the supply and demand ratio in the Triangle, Harris says, since local home buyers won't have to compete with as many investors when buying properties. While the market might not be where it was a year ago, it's still a strong market compared to other markets nationally. That's not to say that there won't be some fluctuations in housing prices, Harris says. Housing prices popped up. They'll probably come back in line a little bit more, but by and large, I still see this as being a very strong market. As an effort to entice more office workers, developers have begun leaning on the ground floor to make a building more attractive, but supply chain issues have been affecting even the smallest of upfits, meaning retail and restaurant tenants are seeing the same cost increases and delays. Wait to open drags on. Smoky Hollow, the mixed-use project on Peace Street, opened its second phase of buildings in the spring of 2021. Despite having seven ground floor tenants signed, its landscaped courtyard remains a ghost town with only one tenant open for business. Local business owner Jared Burton has been working on upfitting his space in Smoky Hollow for months. He's bringing a version of the J-Lights Marketing Cafe concept that he opened in Durham in 2020. The Raleigh version will offer coffee in the morning, sandwiches during the day, and cocktails in the evening. Construction on the 2,025-square-foot empty box began in April, with a project of its size typically taking 12 to 14 weeks, Burton says. Delays have pushed it closer to 18 to 20 weeks. There are delays all over. It's tough, Burton says. But those delays are not exclusive to us. The supply chain is still correcting itself after what has happened over the past 2.5 years. Compared to the Durham location's build-out in early 2020, Burton expected the Smoky Hollow location to be about 40% more expensive. With delays factored in, the project will be more like 55 to 60% more expensive, he says. Still, Burton is eager to open. Smoky Hollow in late fall, when things start coming together, That place is going to be great, he says. Everything has made it a little bit more difficult, but that just makes it a little sweeter when it does happen. Until then, construction clangs on. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. New Duke leader has Blue Devils trending up. A trip to Raleigh for a Triangle Business Journal photo shoot gave a glimpse as to why the new Duke University athletics director is off to a fast start. On September 1, 2021, Nina King moved into a role held by legends such as Eddie Cameron, Tom Butters, and Kevin White. But King is her own person, a mix of relaxed and easy humor with an ability to shift easily to serious topics. On her reaction to accusations that a Brigham Young University fan racially insulted Duke volleyball player, she says, I would say not surprised, but disappointed. Under King, Duke has made promising transitions in men's basketball, where John Shire has recruited spectacularly, and football, which has renewed energy. King, the second black woman to lead an ACC program, hired Mike Elko to replace David Cutliffe, whose 14-year tenure ran out of steam. Elko has connected with students, no easy task at Duke, and freshmen were given free jerseys with the number 26 for their graduation year of 2026. An energized student body was a big chunk of the 20,772 fans who attended Duke's 30-0 opening win over Temple University. Duke is now giving jerseys to other classes as well. It's about community engagement, says King, noting that Duke reached the ACC title game in 2013 and can do so again. She praises Elko for his intellect, enthusiasm, and dry sense of humor. He's a great fit for Duke, she says. Lot sizes shrinking over time. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, lot sizes are shrinking as the average lot for a new home fell from 18,760 square feet in 1978 to 13,896 square feet in 2020. Angie, a home services company, estimated the average lot size in each major metro. In the Raleigh-Cary Metro, the average lot size is 15,681 square feet, 21st largest among the metros analyzed in the study, with a price of $34.15 per square foot. In the Charlotte Metro, the average lot size is under 14,500 square feet and less than $30 per square foot. Canadian leader tours Triangle. James Hill has represented Canada around the world, and the Council General for the Southeast visited the Triangle this week to highlight and enhance ties to the state. North Carolina exports $6.5 billion in goods to Canada annually and another $1.3 billion in services, according to 2021 numbers. The state imports $4.4 billion in goods. At the moment, there is no export advantage for North Carolina, Hill says, but it's not win-lose. These are really integrated economies. North Carolina exports $837 million annually in pharmaceutical products and $359 million in plastics and plastic articles to Canada. One mission for Hill is emphasizing the security of trading with Canada. Globalization has had its benefits, he says, but secure, cooperative, and reliable markets such as Canada and Mexico have a greater payoff in the long term. They are reliable and are not subject to the geopolitical aberrations that can take place. NC State Dean Search relaunched. Nearly 9 months later, NC State University is still looking for a dean to run the fourth largest college at the school. The university began in January looking for a replacement for Rich Linton, who left his role leading the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences to become president of Kansas State University. The institution assembled a nomination committee and in late June released the names of three finalists for the position who were interviewed in July. But now the university is relaunching the dean search this fall, noting the indelible impact the college has on the state's agriculture industry. Triad inspired by Raleigh Project. Triad investors are looking to replicate the success of Dock 1053 in Raleigh with a warehouse in Winston-Salem. The group has purchased a century-old R.J. Reynolds tobacco building and plans to make it a launching point for entrepreneurs and cottage businesses. That model has been wildly successful for Grub Ventures, which revived an old A&P warehouse. Investor Algernon Cash told the Triad Business Journal that many people started at their home, but may be to a point where they need to move outside of their home and into more of a physical space. The group paid $490,000 for the property last year. And finally, Raleigh Brewery taps Oak Island. Lone Rider Brewery, a Raleigh-based brewing and distribution company, is expanding to the coast after taking over the former Fish House space at Oak Island. The new location includes a dog-friendly beer garden, restaurant, live music space, and on-site brewing capabilities. Lone Rider marks the latest brewing company venturing to the island area, with Solar Brewing Company and Carolina Crab Brewing Company also set to open this year. Started in 2009, the Lone Rider brand has two Raleigh locations and one Wake Forest location. The company also cans and distributes its beers and seltzer drinks. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to 52 Shades of Success, Earth and Equity. The headline, Aiding from Experience, Carolyn Covington sheds light on the employability of persons with disabilities. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the Earth and Equity Project explores the growing awareness, actions, and accountability of businesses and leaders who face opportunities and challenges relating to environmental, social, and governance, or ESG, issues. The 52-week project will highlight what selected companies and Triangle executives are doing to address climate change, diversity, equity, inclusion, and ways to maneuver the new world of corporate responsibilities. More than 80% of people who have a disability don't have a job. If unemployment was this high among any other disadvantaged community, society would be in an uproar. By comparison, the second quarter unemployment rate among minorities was under 3% for Asian Americans, roughly 4% among the Hispanic Latinx community, and almost 6% for blacks. Unemployment in the American Indian Alaska Native population was 8% at the end of 2021. Being black didn't hold Carolyn Covington back from becoming a successful entrepreneur, but losing her sight at the pinnacle of her career nearly destroyed her. When she was declared legally blind in 2014, she had already become an iconic force in the beauty industry across the Triangle and beyond. She was well known for a chain of salons, in-flight hair salon that she had opened for or mentored into existence, for a skincare and cosmetics line she had launched, Desire Hair Care, and for her partnership in the day spa industry. There was very little diversity in spas when I became a partner and director at Jolie the Day Spa in Cameron Village, Covington says. That was in 2000. The wellness industry was booming. There were Jolie Day Spas in Bethesda, Maryland, and in Atlanta's Tony Buckhead neighborhood. But Covington didn't see anyone who looked like her frequenting the spas. She changed that dynamic. When people saw me, an African-American, at the director level, it helped draw minorities, so we had people from every nationality coming there and working there, she says, adding at least 25% of their employees were black. Amidst that success, she was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, or RP, an incurable degenerative eye disease. She told none of her business associates about the diagnosis. In 2002, when the Raleigh Spa was sold along with the other Jolie locations to venture capitalists, the total package garnered a sales price of $6 million. Covington didn't miss a beat. She again opened in-flight salons in North Raleigh and Durham. I was racing. I thought I could beat this blindness thing, that they'd find a cure and I could keep building my beauty empire, Covington says. She was wrong, but she was even more wrong when she shut down. I was messing up on things and my lease was up at the shopping center in North Raleigh, she says. Instead of renewing, she decided to go home. It was the wrong decision. It was like I disappeared for 2 years. I spiraled into depression and eventually gave up. This from a woman who had channeled her anger over racial discrimination into determination, which led to opening her first salon at the age of 21. She has a high school guidance counselor to thank for that success, but for all the wrong reasons. Covington was one of 200 black students bused 45 miles from her home to a school with 800 white students after her parents purposefully relocated from D.C. to Maryland in pursuit of better education for their children. Her grades plummeted. She became rebellious. Her attendance faltered, all of which disqualified her to be selected for a cosmetology program at the vocational high school, and yet the counselor picked her. He said, I definitely was not college material, but if I pursued this trade, I could at least get some kind of job, and that there was such high teenage pregnancy in the black community, I'd probably end up on welfare. determination set in. Not only was she going to have a job, she was going to be an entrepreneur and provide jobs for others. Rosetta Pringle, owner of Still You Hair Solutions in North Raleigh, is just one of the thousands Covington has influenced. She was 22 when she met Covington and began to work at In-Flight Hair Salon in Raleigh. To this day, she still mentors me, and now I'm 56. She partnered with me to open an in-flight salon in Durham that I kept for 20 years, says Pringle, who also looked to Covington for advice when she switched to providing restoration and replacement hair solutions at Still You Hair. Carolyn has the best business vision ever. She sees further out than me and sometimes pushed me when I didn't want to be out there, but she's boosted my confidence as an entrepreneur, Pringle adds. That same fiery commitment to advocate for others drove Covington to create Insightful Visionaries in 2016, with the mission of educating and empowering people with disabilities. She became involved with the organization Industries for the Blind, which led to Insightful Visionaries hosting the National Blind Idol Competition in Raleigh. From there, other events have evolved, including the Women Uplifting Women event on September 17 and Christmas Without Lights on December 17. And also with this article, there's a small section of information, Insightful Visionaries, Carolyn Marshall Covington, founder and CEO, website insightfulvisionaries.org, nonprofit founded 2016, headquarters Raleigh, board and team 10 people. And the annual events, Women Uplifting Women and Christmas Without Lights Mystery Event. And also in the 52 Shades of Success section, there's one small news article. Advance Auto fuels LGBT plus co-working space. When the Harmony NC LGBT plus Allied Chamber of Commerce announced plans for an LGBT plus allied co-working community and entrepreneurial incubator, Advance Auto Parts, or AAP, was first in line with a corporate sponsorship, pledging $15,000 a year for 2022 and 2023. The co-working space, branded as SEEN, S-E-E-N, is expected to be the nation's first dedicated LGBT plus work environment that includes a retail and entrepreneurial incubator. Advance Auto Senior VP of EHS, Environmental Health and Safety, Sustainability and Procurement, Mike Miller, who also serves as chair of the Advance Pride and Allies team member network, says, Advance Auto has had a long-standing relationship with Harmony, dating to 2019 when the organization was formerly the Raleigh Business and Professionals Network. The company's LGBT plus employee resource group was created in 2016 and has more than 1,000 members. The focus of our Advance Auto Parts Pride and Allies team member network is to celebrate our LGBTQ plus team members and customers, provide career development opportunities, promote allyship across the company, and partner with organizations that share our values, Miller says. The company also has a proactive Advance the Conversation series, which Miller says creates opportunities for team members to discuss allyship and the challenges our LGBTQ plus team members may face. Harmony launched the fundraising campaign for SEEN in July with an initial goal of $350,000, which will support leasing the space at Raleigh founded and covering the cost of technology, upfitting the space, and staffing needs. Thus far, Harmony has raised roughly $75,000. To accelerate fundraising for SEEN, Harmony is hosting an invitation-only open house at Raleigh founded on October 6. Visitors will be able to experience the vision for SEEN and hear from corporate sponsors, including Advance Auto Parts, and workplace options. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Tech and Aviation page, written by Lauren Onasorge. Stakes are high in Channel Advisor deal. Commerce Hub's $663 million buy could create a few millionaires. The proposed buyout of Morrisville-based Channel Advisor could create a slew of new Triangle millionaires, but the risks are high as a new beefed-up Commerce Hub would have to deliver to in an increasingly competitive landscape. Commerce Hub announced plans to buy the e-commerce software maker this month, a deal valuing the firm at $663 million. Rick Watson, a Channel Advisor veteran who is now CEO and founder of New York-based RMW Commerce Consulting, says the deal is proof of Commerce Hub's new expansion mindset under CEO Brian Dove, who arrived in May 2021. Commerce Hub, which secured a major investment from Insight Partners last year, allows retailers such as Walmart and Macy's to ship products directly from distributors to customers. Its platform was used to make $35 billion worth of transactions for more than 15,000 brands, retailers, and suppliers in 2021. And with the addition of Channel Advisor, it will be able to easily link those brands to online shopping marketplaces such as Amazon and eBay. But it's not the first time the firm has made a play aimed at marketplaces. Commerce Hub made a similar move 8 years ago when it bought out Seattle-based retail technology firm Mercent, a Channel Advisor competitor. At the time, Commerce Hub CEO Frank Poore said the deal would be a game changer, allowing retailers to radically expand their product assortment, generate greater demand, and optimize customer delivery from any source of supply, including stores, warehouses, drop shippers, or third-party sellers. But despite the fanfare, Commerce Hub was ultimately unsuccessful at growing that business and winning market share from Channel Advisor, Watson said. I think this is their second bite of the apple at this marketplace market, which clearly Amazon is the leader in, Watson said of the Channel Advisor deal. Executives and other insiders also have a stake in the company that could make a deal like what Commerce Hub is offering even more enticing. It's unclear what impact the deal might have on the Triangle specifically, where the firm has 368 employees. Here's what IBM wants for its next buy. Attention startups, IBM's next buy could be just around the corner. We're always shopping, Tom Rosamilia, senior vice president of IBM software, told analysts at the Evercore ISI Technology, Media and Telecom Conference recently. IBM, which has one of its largest campuses in Research Triangle Park, acquired open source software firm Red Hat in 2019. Rosamilia said the firm is always looking for more companies to add to its portfolio, but that its net is extremely narrow. I want it to be a close cousin or a brother or sister or something we're already doing, he said. If it's too far afield, I'm not going to get the benefit of the synergy from our sales force. IBM has made 13 acquisitions in the software space since 2020, though none nearly as big as the $34 billion deal for Red Hat. RDU's business travel lags despite rebound. While travelers are returning to the skies, their behavior has changed drastically since pre-pandemic times, including at Raleigh-Durham International Airport, new numbers show. Business travel continues to lag behind leisure. Data from airline reporting company on ticketing volume shows that through August, RDU saw a 30% over 70% split between corporate and leisure traffic. In 2019, the split was 43% to 57% during the same time period. Business travelers typically are more willing to pay a higher price for travel than those traveling for leisure. Overall ticket levels are down about 20% compared to 2019 levels, according to ARC. And in a section called She Said It, we have a quote from PureThread CEO Lisa Grimes on the RTP-based startup's patented antimicrobial yarns being manufactured in Asia. A lot of products are manufactured in Asia, so we think this will help further the ability to solve consumer requests. And finally, a big number, $6 million. That's how much Raleigh's Levitate, which provides marketing software to businesses, raised in a round co-led by Bull City Venture Partners and Tippett Venture Partners. CEO Jesse Lipsom says the money will give the company a runway well into next year. And now we turn to the On Healthcare page, written by Zach Ezone. Pharma giant plans to ramp up in Clayton. Novo Nordisk looking to add hundreds of Johnston County jobs. A Danish pharmaceutical company plans to add hundreds of jobs in Johnston County over the next decade. The county's Board of Commissioners approved September 6 incentives to support the expansion of Novo Nordisk during the next 12 years. The company has not yet released details of its plans, but expects to invest millions of dollars into the expansion of its manufacturing site outside Clayton. Novo has operated in Clayton for more than 30 years, during which time the company has completed 8 previous expansions. With its upcoming investments, Novo is evaluating ways to improve production capacity and update equipment at its injectable finished products facility on Powhatan Road, said Shyla Nunn Jones, the company's government and public affairs lead, during the commissioner's meeting. These future investments will add to the billions that Novo has poured into its operations in the county in recent years, which has seen the company grow its local headcount to more than 1,700 employees. Novo in 2015 announced its plans to build a $2 billion manufacturing facility in the county, which was followed in 2018 by two additional expansions in Clayton, one totaling $65 million and the other $22 million. The exact amount of the company's future capital investment will be based on market conditions throughout the 12-year term of the incentives agreement. If the company hits the required capital and employment benchmarks, it will receive grants in amounts that are percentages of what the company has paid in property taxes on the new investments. Novo will complete the capital investments in four tranches. If the company fails to make the first tranche of capital investments by the end of 2025, the county has no obligation to pay any grants. Incentives only come from and after the company's investment, said Chris Johnson, director of the county's Economic Development Office, during the commissioner's meeting. Novo operates three manufacturing facilities in the Triangle focused on diabetes and obesity medicines, two of which are in Clayton and the other in Durham. The latter is a more recent addition, with Novo in 2019 acquiring a facility from Connecticut-based Purdue Pharma to strengthen its U.S. supply chain for the diabetes drug Rybelsus. Morrisville firm tries to forestall delisting. Facing a delisting, a company headquartered in Morrisville is implementing a reverse stock split. Nant Health, which develops medical software solutions, is implementing the split to raise its share price, which has remained in penny stock territory most of the year. The company is part of NantWorks, a network of various public and private companies owned by billionaire Patrick Soon-Shiong, who also owns the Los Angeles Times. Nant Health has notified stockholders that its board of directors has authorized a reverse split of shares in which each 15 outstanding shares will be reclassified and combined into one, with the primary intent of increasing the trading price of the company's shares on the NASDAQ, according to an August 24 securities filing. This follows NASDAQ informing the company in February that it was not in compliance with the rule that establishes a minimum bid price for listed companies. Biotech acquires Morrisville Lab. A Colorado-based biotechnology company has established a presence in the Triangle through a recent acquisition. Flagship Biosciences acquired a Morrisville-based division of the New Jersey company Interspace Biosciences. The division, Interspace Pharma Solutions, provides molecular analysis services to support clinical trials and diagnostic development. As part of the deal, Flagship paid Interspace $7 million and could pay an additional earnout up to $2 million that's dependent on revenue from the Pharma Solutions division, according to securities filings. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from CEO Derek Evans on Target RWE's approach to leaning into a flexible work environment. There's always a challenge in finding top talent, and we have found that by allowing flexibility in our workforce, we can find and retain talent a lot easier than if we were to force them to come into one geographical location. And finally, a big number, 40. The number of research sites Durham's Velocity Clinical Research operates, up from 14 locations more than a year ago. This period of expansion follows the London-based private equity firm GHO Capital acquiring Velocity in April 2021. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Bromette. Developer sticks with plan for Kmart site, city preferred live-work-play approach at future transit site. Plans for a large retail center are back on the table for a site along Raleigh's future bus rapid transit line. The new development will include a Harris Teeter, retail shops with outdoor patios, and a gas station, according to city records. The property, located at 4500 Western Boulevard, is owned by a development group out of Wilmington operating under the name Jack A. Sneeden Corporation. When plans for the site were first announced at the end of 2020, they didn't align with the city's vision for the area. But the city's planning department didn't have the power at the time to request changes, Raleigh Planning Director Patrick Young says. We reached out to the owner's team and said, we don't have any means to force you at this point, but we do think that you should consider the opportunity that's happening here with the transit service, Young says. They listened politely, and I think they went back and considered it, but they decided to proceed. Young and his team were vying for a live-work-play center with a residential and retail mixed-use feel that would better align with the goal of the bus rapid transit system. Now the city has passed a transit overlay district for properties along bus rapid transit lines to require that new developments meet certain use and aesthetic requirements. But this development was proposed prior to that overlay taking effect and therefore is not bound by the new requirements, Young says. At the end of 2020, site plans were submitted to the city for the property. The plans called for a 67,000 square foot Harris Teeter with the potential for 50,000 square feet for future retail use. But the property's owners ceased activity on the project shortly after, according to city records. The plans have now been revived with new filings submitted to the city this summer. The development company is registered to Stuart E. Sneeden, who also is affiliated with Sneeden Management and Z.A. Sneeden's Sons Incorporated in Wilmington. Sneeden could not be reached for comment. New cocktail bar coming to downtown Cary. Inside a 1900s home, Prohibitive will soon be serving classic drinks and small bites. The historic home known as the Matthews House will operate as a wedding venue on the weekends and a cocktail bar on weekday nights. The bar is a partnership between the owners of the house, Shara Chung and her husband, and Southern Harvest Hospitality Group. The atmosphere will be upscale but relaxed, Chung says. Featured cocktails include classic drinks made with North Carolina spirits like Raleigh rum. A selection of red and white wines and North Carolina craft beer will also be available. The Chungs purchased the property in 2016 for $1.5 million and have kept it operating as a wedding venue. The 0.55-acre lot is situated in the middle of downtown Cary at 317 West Chatham Street. The two-story home measures about 4,000 square feet, according to Wake County property records, and features various gardens outside. New England firm opens office in Cary. Phase Zero Design, a firm of about 50 employees based in New England, wants to stand out as national architecture firms flock to the Triangle. With 2021 revenue at $7.6 million, the outfit is smaller compared to the other newcomers, but Phase Zero is aiming to make a splash, says Lindsay Corsino, associate principal. Unlike a larger firm bringing its plug-and-play, prototypical office into the market, we're excited to build an office that is a Raleigh interpretation of Phase Zero Design, not Phase Zero Design's interpretation of Raleigh, she says. The office is located at 128 Tower View Court in Cary. Phase Zero is currently looking for a tenant. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from Ryan Richardson, president of True Spec Golf on the golf retailer and custom fitting company, opening inside Raleigh's Dogwood Country Club at 2431 Crabtree Boulevard. True Spec Golf also has a Southern Pines location. North Carolina is a golf-rich state with a clear need for a second True Spec location to meet demand. And finally, a big number, 32. That's the net gain of storefront businesses downtown Raleigh has seen since the start of 2021. The Downtown Raleigh Alliance is working to use added retail as a way to replace lost traffic from office workers, despite the area lacking a retail-friendly reputation. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Kaylee Thompson. Rezoning sought for Triangle Town Center. Cohan Group wants option to rise to five stories at Raleigh Mall. New plans could signal big changes for the Triangle Town Center in Raleigh. The new owner of the sprawling mall located off Capitol Boulevard near Interstate 540 plans to seek a rezoning to allow for taller development on a portion of the property, which has seen foot traffic dwindle over the years as traditional shopping malls succumb to a changing economy and shifting demographics. A September 8 neighborhood meeting discussed the proposed rezoning for 11 acres that includes two rows of retail out parcels adjacent to the main mall and stretching south towards Sumner Boulevard. The proposal for the property at 5959 Triangle Town Boulevard is to change it to commercial mixed use with a height limit of 5 stories. Its current zoning is commercial mixed use with a height limit of 3 stories. The meeting notice indicates the rest of the Triangle Town Center would remain its current zoning designation, which also limits heights to 3 stories. The mall is currently owned by Cohan Retail Investment Group, a New York investment management company. Cohan bought the property in 2021 for $33.25 million. The sale followed years of financial distress for the Triangle Town Center, and the sale price was a fraction of the $174 million the property fetched in the previous private sale in 2016. Triangle Town Center is the only property Cohan owns in the Triangle. Cohan invests in retail and hotel properties around the country, taking a special interest in dying malls in an effort to revitalize them into spaces that include entertainment and food in addition to retail. But the company has also been criticized for buying malls and then letting the properties languish. "It's a beautiful mall. It's a stabilized mall. We love it," said Michael Cohan, company founder and CEO at the time of the sale. Officials with Cohan could not be reached for comment about the plans for Triangle Town Center. At the time of the purchase, Cohan officials said they had no major plans for the mall, but were considering adding more entertainment options to it. This rezoning request could be in preparation for that addition. Age-restricted housing project planned. Age-restricted apartments will be coming to Wendell Falls, a sprawling master plan community in the Triangle. North America Seksu House and Brookfield Properties, owners of Wendell Falls, recently closed on a development plan for a 140-unit apartment community for residents 55 and older. The community, named Arden at Wendell Falls, will have units that will be 870 square feet for one bedroom and 1,399 square feet for two bedrooms. Amenities will include a creative arts and business center, library, swimming pool, and pickleball court, among others. Construction is expected to start in April with an estimated completion of late 2024. Nash and Brookfield are not releasing the cost of the project at this time. New plan could bring 20-story development. The Shops at Alexander Place could see big changes as a new rezoning request recently filed with the City of Raleigh would allow up to 20 stories for residential, commercial, and office space. Raleigh-based developer Focus Property owns the 17.6-acre retail center along Skyland Ridge Parkway on the north side of Highway 70. Focus Property's president, Pratik Shandak, says that with only 74,000 square feet of retail and office space, the center isn't being used to its fullest potential. Zoning currently limits development to 3 stories. The plan is to make the center a mixed-use development with multifamily units. Compass opens expanded Raleigh office. Compass, a New York-based real estate brokerage firm, opened a new office in Raleigh on August 25. Linked to the space are 140 real estate broker agents. The office is at 3800 Glenwood Avenue, Suite 150, and has just under 16,000 square feet spread across 2 floors. The office comes after just 1 year of Compass expanding into North Carolina. And finally, a big number, $2.8 million. The amount local developer Atlas Stark paid per acre for 9 lots total in South Raleigh. All told, Atlas bought the 4.54 acres for $13 million. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Runaway Raleigh Growth Tests Our Civility. A few days ago, right after Labor Day, there was a Raleigh City Council meeting, and almost everyone acted as if they forgot the manners they were taught in elementary school. Mayor Marianne Baldwin was trying to cut the voice of citizens interested in city council proceedings, who in turn tried to cut the voice of Raleigh Planning Director Patrick Young because they did not like what Young had to say. For the most part, it really was about the city's missing middle policy that promotes density and is marketed as a tool to address affordability. Currently on hand are 2 projects, one in the Hayes-Barton neighborhood of Raleigh that transforms an old house into multiple townhouses, and a rezoning request from John Kane tied to a North Hills property where he plans to build up to 40 stories with office, retail, and residential units. Things got heated right from the start during the public hearing process and never got better. We will talk about the Hayes-Barton project some other day. Let's focus on the North Hills project for now. Some city council members, such as Patrick Bufkin and David Cox, argued that not enough traffic study has been done to understand the potential impact of such a tall building in North Hills. Other council members argued that folks who work at stores in North Hills could not afford to live at Kane's properties because they are way too expensive. As a show of compromise, the developers promised 600-square-foot one-bedroom apartments for $1,500. Huh, not sure that was a good call. Developers were also asked to put money into the city's housing affordability fund in the past, but those negotiations did not gain momentum. So the question is, who exactly is trying to take the right road for Raleigh, not only North Hills, but for Raleigh? The answer lies in what Mitchell Silver said almost a decade ago. There should be three uber-dense areas in the city: downtown, North Hills, and Briar Creek. He added that by doing this, developers would know what to ask for when it comes to new development. I agree with Silver, even today. If people know North Hills will have as many buildings as possible and will become denser with every passing year, people can make the choice if they want to live there. The same people who are complaining about Kane's latest effort have seen their home valuations across North Hills double in the past 10 years as Kane was building up North Hills. In the year 2000, when North Hills was really nothing, a JCPenney store and a big swath of closed shops and garbage trucks, Kane's various ownership tracts paid about $275,000 in taxes to Raleigh and Wake County, according to records from the Wake County Tax Office. In 2021, Kane paid almost $11 million to both government entities, the second highest taxpayer after Duke Energy Progress. Yes, Kane is making money for himself and his investors, but isn't that what businesses do? They also employ people. Of course, the government and its citizens should stand up and fight for equality, but when did we start thinking being rude and uncivil is the right approach to hammer out an agreement? With elections just 2 months away, showboating goes a long way in getting elected or getting a point across. I wonder if that was the primary cause of this vociferous NIMBY, not in my backyard, banter. All of this can be achieved through civility, however. We can do better. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World, inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. The column written by David Heinen, who is Vice President for Public Policy and Advocacy for the NC Center for Nonprofits, is titled, "Noncompliance Can Jeopardize Nonprofits." Several local media outlets recently reported the Internal Revenue Service had revoked the tax-exempt status of the North Carolina chapter of the NAACP this spring. The national NAACP had lost its tax-exempt status because it failed to file its Form 990 for three straight years, and that many state and local NAACP chapters, including several in the Triangle, also lost their tax exemption because of this error. This highlights the ways that noncompliance can jeopardize a nonprofit's ability to provide its programs and services. The loss of tax-exempt status creates fundraising challenges for 501c3 nonprofits and can delegitimize an organization in the eyes of the public. Media stories about noncompliance can further tarnish a nonprofit's reputation. Nonprofit staff and boards can help safeguard their organization's tax-exempt status by taking steps to avoid the most common forms of nonprofit noncompliance. Who regulates nonprofits? Nonprofits often wonder what consequences they may face if they violate various federal or state laws. Several agencies regulate nonprofits. The IRS regulates tax-exempt nonprofits, including 501c3 public charities, private foundations that make grants to other nonprofits, 501c4 social welfare organizations, and 501c6 trade organizations. The IRS automatically revokes the tax-exempt status of any nonprofit that hasn't filed its Form 990 for three consecutive years. While the IRS has limited staffing for enforcing laws related to tax-exempt entities, it can impose penalties on 501c3 nonprofits for engaging in partisan politics or for using charitable assets to provide financial benefits to board members or other insiders. The North Carolina Secretary of State regulates charitable solicitation by North Carolina nonprofits. Most nonprofits are required to obtain annual charitable solicitation licenses if they ask members of the public for donations. If you are ever unsure about the legitimacy of a nonprofit asking for a donation, you can check the Secretary of State's website to see if it has a charitable solicitation license. Note that certain types of nonprofits, including hospitals, private schools, churches, YMCAs, and organizations that normally receive less than $25,000 in contributions annually, are exempt from licensing requirements. Nonprofits that violate state charitable solicitation laws can be subject to financial penalties and can lose the trust of their donors and the people they serve. The North Carolina Attorney General also has the authority to review major nonprofit transactions, such as mergers and asset transfers, and to investigate allegations of misuse of assets by charitable nonprofits. While the vast majority of nonprofits aren't on the Attorney General's radar, a few high-profile nonprofit investigations like reviews of hospital mergers can garner media scrutiny. Tips on compliance. The vast majority of noncompliance by nonprofits stems from oversight by nonprofit leaders rather than from malfeasance. This type of oversight is understandable since nonprofits need to comply with federal and state laws, some of which require regular filings with government agencies, and many organizations are undersourced. If you work for a nonprofit or serve on a nonprofit board, here are three tips to help prevent from running afoul of federal and state laws. Make sure your Form 990 is filed. Tax-exempt organizations are required to file some version of the Form 990 with the IRS every year. As evidenced by the recent news stories about the NAACP, the IRS can revoke the tax-exempt status of any nonprofit that fails to file a 990 for three consecutive years. Volunteer-run nonprofits and organizations with recent staffing changes often forget to file their 990s and are at risk of losing their tax-exempt status. Small nonprofits with budgets under $50,000 may be eligible to file the Form 990N or e-postcard, an easy-to-complete online form. Avoid partisan politics. Charitable nonprofits are prohibited from engaging in partisan politics. This means they can't endorse or oppose candidates for office or political parties and that they can't make campaign contributions. It is, however, legal for nonprofits to advocate on public policy issues, to take positions on ballot measures, and to engage in nonpartisan election-related activities like voter registration and voter education. And in an election year, nonprofits understandably have many questions about whether particular types of election engagement by their staff and board members are permissible. The center has published answers to many of the most common election year questions for nonprofits on its website. And do regular compliance checkups. Nonprofits need to comply with dozens of federal and state laws, and it is easy for even the most careful organization to occasionally run afoul of these rules. It's helpful for nonprofits to undertake a compliance checkup every year to help avoid legal trouble and prevent their organizations from being in news headlines for the wrong reasons. To help nonprofits do this, the center publishes a legal compliance checklist on its website and updates it every fall. And as we're about to run out of time with the Triangle Business Journal, let's take a look at the Business Pulse survey. The question, how do you do your shopping? The total number of responses are 245. And by how you do your shopping, they seem to mean online or in person. A mix of both, 55%. Depends on what I'm buying, 18%. Online, 17%. And in person at the store, 10%. Well, we will go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.